from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
I told you last segment, my confidence, my belief has never been lower on this Cubs team.
Giants win it. A walk-off walk.
Lower.
Man, it is low right now. Here's Cliff Floyd from the Marquee Local postgame last night.
As soon as the team gets down early, it feels like it's 10-0. It feels like the fight is gone.
Damn. 312-644-6767. Jake in Lake Geneva on 670 The Score. What's up, Jake?
The thrill is gone.
Sing it, Jake.
The thrill is gone.
Yeah.
The
thrill is gone.
Hey, man, I don't do this every day. I listen to you guys talk about it. So I take the information that's provided that you get from people who supposedly know.
Yeah.
And then I formulate my opinions, and then I sit on the phone and wait 10 or 15 minutes to talk to you about it. And you do a great job of explaining it, and you treat me respectfully. So I think the thrill
is with you guys. I think the thrill is with you.
Dad, thanks so much for coming on today. Love you so much.
That was awesome, whoever that was.
Oh, the thrill is gone. Baby's gone. Away for good.
I have to hear that song again.
He's trying.
It's a very different song.
Getting
than
that
when
gravel going. Had some Len Casper in it.
Yeah.
The thrill is gone.
So,
the thrill is gone.
Oh, baby.
That's funny.
One, two, three.
And here we go. Here we go. Here we go, Jim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Good to be back. Heard some of that yesterday. That was good singing by not you, the caller.
Caller was on it, man.
Yeah, it was good.
And at the same time, he was saying, look, I don't know. I just listen to you guys for takes. And then I might offer him. It was good to take calls in that 5 o'clock and hear a lot of people questioning these Cubs and trying to sort out things in the macro, going as big picture as they can and thinking about why this thing isn't where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and you know, Lawrence and I going back and forth in transition, he's like, are you saying they can't spend more? I was like, no, they could spend more. I'm sure they could spend to a number where they could lose money or whatever, and that would be great. And I wish that they would spend $1 billion and buy every player. They weren't going to get Ohtani. They weren't going to get Yamamoto, right? We've learned that. This is, to me, about spending poorly.
Yeah, and it's the kind of priorities of spending. I keep thinking about just like a throwaway sentence. It wasn't a throwaway, but a sentence that Pat Mooney put in a Seiya Suzuki piece on The Athletic a couple weeks ago, and I went and grabbed it again just to make sure. This methodical rebuild that prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle. And like that's been the thought process, and I get it. It's intelligent. It's a little in love with its own theory.
It's also informed by last time.
It's informed by last time. Yes, it is informed by the way, and it's informed by the end of it in Boston too. I mean, the whole thing fell apart for Theo in Boston with John Lackey's money and Carl Crawford's money, and then it fell apart here because of Jason Hayward's money and because Darvish had a bad year on that money and Brandon Morrow and everything. And that's usually how it falls apart. Remember Jed talking about how they didn't want to be like the Phillies when their thing ended, or the Mike Ilitch Tigers when their thing ended. So they're trying.
But at least some of those teams had a thing.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
thing is not a thing.
And they clearly have been trying to do it in a way that won't leave them screwed at the end of it. And it's a really tough thing to do when you do it that way. Because then if you pay guys who are in their prime, like Hap and Nico and Seiya, they got to be great. They got to be great. And they're not great. And they don't have a star to lean on in the back end.
That's been my thing all year. Like, I've been pretty consistent on this. Like, their best players aren't playing well.
Yeah, yeah, but it's like I'm fascinated by the team building aspect where they're not at the tippity top of just buying and buying and buying, and they're not at the forced efficiency of Tampa Bay and Cleveland and Milwaukee.
They're
and
not
such.
Close to that.
No, though. But they're in the middle, and they're screwing up. They're screwing up on some of that scouting and development. I mean, the kids are supposed to be here and be helping by now.
Yeah, they're much closer to the top than Tampa. Much closer.
For sure.
There are two outlier north of $300 million spends, Mets and Yankees. Astros are third at 251. Cubs are eight at 226 in terms of payroll.
Yeah, for sure.
So they're $25 million from the third highest spending team in baseball. And the Brewers, who are the third highest spending team in the division, are at $107 million. So the difference between $107 and $226, we're talking $119 million.
I'm thinking about some of those teams, though, are paying well over $100 million contracts for multiple players.
Yes.
So in terms of the big star spends, that's what they're not doing. Because a lot of those teams are paying for the big star spends and then augmenting with their own kids who are cheap and cost you nothing. And you need that kind of balance. And this is a payroll with a lot of stuff in the middle. A lot of stuff in the middle.
It's made up of a lot of $20 bills.
Right.
Not a lot of singles, not a lot of hundreds.
Exactly.
It's made up of a lot of $20 bills.
Exactly. And a lot of the big behemoths have hundreds and singles in the wallet aplenty, and that's not the way it's working here.
Yeah, and man, the feeling of inevitability when Steele leaves that game last night.
God.
That was the thing that is like, oh, okay, this game's late. I'd like to go to bed after 7. But I know, two-run lead, what are you kidding? Of course I've got to stay up for this game. Not even a question.
All those innings early on, it had some of that inevitability feeling when it's bases loaded, nobody out, they get one run. You know, bases loaded, nobody out, they get no runs. First and third, nobody out, they get no runs.
Triple and a single, but it's an infield hit, no one scores.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, this game's too close.
Yeah.
Just weird things are happening.
4 for 15 with runners in scoring position and 12 left on base. You're like, those runs are going to matter, aren't they? Those runs, they're not scoring. And of course they did.
Yep. I wonder if Nico would speak to that feeling of inevitability. I doubt it. I get, you know, they seem to have an ability to flush it and treat every game as its own individual occurrence. That's kind of the superpower of the professional athlete. But I know watching it last night after 7 innings, I was like, well, this is, not only is it not literally over, there's 6 more outs to go. It's like, you don't even feel, it felt like a tie game. It felt like a tie game when you're up 2 and your ace is out of the game. It was just an absolutely ridiculous thing.
Yeah, the fact that this entire organization doesn't know who's getting the 9th inning from night to night to night is a crazy concept that we have to talk about later on.
Nico Horner joins us to discuss the state of the Cubs from the inside next on The Score.
Leading off for the Parkins and Spiegel Show, number 2, Nico Horner.
Nico Horner is on the show with us every Tuesday. And
oh, sick.
Nico Horner, that's so fun.
We drove to the park together. We were listening to Nico on with Parkins and Spiegel. Oh, man, it's funny.
Nico Horner, how are you, man? Keep rocking it, mate.
Got good hair.
Yes.
He's jacked, too.
Yeah, he is.
I'm jealous.
Starting second baseman for your Chicago Cubs.
And the 1-2 ground ball right side. Going to be a tough play for Horner. Grabs it, quick throw, and he got him. Beautiful play by Nico Horner. Good footwork, good quick hands, and an accurate throw. You can't do it any better than he just did.
Horner, who he can't from where he's standing see his hometown. We can see his hometown. He lines this one into right field, base hit. He hit it towards his hometown. He's from Oakland.
Oh.
Well, he hit it more towards, like, Hayward.
I thought you were going to say he's from McCovey Cove.
It's amazing. He's the first kid to grow up in McCovey Cove and make it to the big leagues. Nice. From Oakland. Went to high school in the East Bay. Went to Stanford. So you know Nico Horner, every time he comes here, he's got all kinds of friends and family.
That's cool at first, and then it becomes a pain.
Got to delegate.
Yeah.
Taking you inside the Cubs clubhouse all season long.
The Odyssey softball team.
We don't need you.
Yeah.
So, I'm good.
Bro. I'll cheer. I can cheer. Or I can just sit and criticize like you guys do.
Perfect.
Nico Horner with Perkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
How fun is that?
This segment with Nico Horner is brought to you by Phillips Chevrolet, the number one selling Chevy dealer in Illinois for 18 years in a row. Nico, kind enough to join us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. I'll have you know, sir, the Odyssey softball team is now 5-0 with a plus 80 run differential. So not much for you to sit around and criticize, Nico.
No, that's definitely pretty good. And is there someone keeping a stat book for throughout that, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, we have an intern who's working very hard on that. So we want to make sure. By the way, I brought your manager a T-shirt, an Odyssey softball T-shirt. I know you have one of those. So now that the manager does, too. We told him that he's welcome to come and play since he barred you from coming to play.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you got to get the itch at some point. I mean, he's a guy who played in the big leagues for a long time, and he can still swing it, I bet. He can definitely still pick it.
Have you seen him?
No, but I know he took a lot of pride in defense. One thing that was cool is he had the same glove for, I might get the exact years wrong, but I think it was pretty close to 10 years, and he brought it in and got to see it, and always cool to see, you know, old equipment like that. And yeah, same glove for a long, long time. That's always a cool one to see.
You're steeped in baseball history this week, man. First, you guys get to watch the Ryan Sandberg stuff on Sunday.
Yeah, and then, legends.
And then the Willie Mays stuff. Last night. I mean, take us to Sandberg. I saw you as, like, the main guy in the locker room. Everyone's like, oh, we need to talk to the second baseman. There we go. Let's talk to him about second base. But what was it like being around and watching that whole Sandberg ceremony from up on that perch as you guys were?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to be a big deal, but I was just really impressed by the showing. I shouldn't be surprised by it, but just the amount of people that were there and were locked in and just appreciate him so much. For everything he did for the Cubs, for how he played, for him still being a part of the organization. And all of that was really moving to see. And I thought our perspective was pretty cool since we were kind of elevated above it and could really see the spectacle of the whole thing. And it was really well done.
How did it come to be for anyone who doesn't know about, like, yeah, let's all go watch this together as a team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was something that was important to council. He, the day before, just told us what time it would be. And, you know, wanted everyone to be there and take it in. And, those kind of things are so important, and just remembering the organization that we're a part of. And, you know, we're just one little part of a long, long line of Cubs history. And also just seeing how much, you know, those moments and people mean to the fans. I mean, we see it every day on the field, but seeing someone who played, 30, 40 years ago and having that lasting impact is really cool to see.
Yeah, it was really cool to see you guys up there. And did you see all the stadium employees up there lining that rail ahead of you and behind you? It's a pretty unique organization to have, everybody attentive like that for something like that.
Yeah, it was just kind of all the layers of Wrigley were there in a way, right? Like, and it's all part of what makes it so special.
And then Marquee did a good job of showing the full pregame presentation yesterday for Willie Mays in San Francisco, the beautiful piece that was narrated by John Miller. What was it like being on the field for the first game in San Francisco since his passing?
Incredibly cool. I mean, I grew up pretty much Willie Mays was always described to me as the greatest player who ever lived. And went to a ton of Giants games growing up, would take Bart in, and, you walk straight to Willie Mays Plaza, and, he's just at the heart of everything here. And just thinking about the time and era that he played baseball and the impact he had, going from the East Coast to the West Coast, and, he debuted so shortly after Jackie Robinson, and everything that he dealt with there, and just the career that he had is so beyond anything that's even conceivable now, I feel like, and amazing to see that tribute in person.
We heard the radio broadcast on the way in talking about how they, from their play-by-play perch, could see your hometown.
That was a cool little excerpt there. Yeah.
So I mean, do you drive around? Do you drive around the old homestead when you're there for a few days and go check out where you grew up or what?
I come back to the Bay Area enough in the off season and stuff that I feel at least decently connected with Oakland still. I think, this morning went and got coffee by the water in the marina kind of over by the Golden Gate. And, you know, lucky to have a lot of friends in San Francisco still, either from college or growing up. And my mom still lives in Oakland. So definitely a homecoming of sorts. Yeah, it feels good.
We're talking to Nico Horner here, Parkins and Spiegel on The Score. So that feeling last night for us watching is one of unease because of missed opportunities early, close games, the result of your guys' record in one-run games, uncertainty with who's going to get the ball in a save situation. Like, it's an uneasy feeling as Cubs fans and media and observers. What's it like for you when you're playing just the next game on the schedule and it happens to be another close game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar thing in the middle of the game versus compared to like moving on from the game. It's like it comes down to like what you can do to actually impact it. And, you know, you mentioned the missed opportunities yesterday. I mean, you can look at the ninth inning all you want, but we had an opportunity to really realistically score 7 or 8 runs in that game, which isn't always true, but we really had that and probably should have yesterday. And, you know, we had great at bats as a whole, but the at bats and the, you know, the run scoring situations didn't come through. And, you know, that's where I think the game was really missed out on opportunity wise from our end, from the position player group. And, you know, all you can do is look at the stuff that you can control and move on from that.
Is it worthwhile to find that pattern and look at runners in scoring position production? Because the only thing that it really gets you, if you're analyzing it, is to this thought process that there's something going on mentally or psychologically. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I don't know if it's worthwhile for you as a player to think about that pattern, and if you have any conclusions you might have drawn.
I don't know as a group. I mean, we talked about last time. I thought it was interesting you guys brought up that we were on the lower end in line drives. Just because that's, you know, that's the ball in play that controls luck the best, right? If you put a ball on the line, it's got a good chance to produce. You know, I think it probably varies guy to guy. You know, there might be some guys that are more aggressive with runners in scoring position, and there's some guys that situation makes them passive. I think for all of us, the best runner in scoring position approach is owning your strengths and really not changing much at all, because just a well-hit ball in play fits every scenario in baseball, right? So, you know, not letting situations change you too much, I think is usually the best thing to fall back on.
How about for you specifically? Because that makes sense as the group, but it's hard to speak for the group. How about for you? Because like, I heard Pat Hughes the other day said, here's Nico Horner, a 240 hitter. He's not a 240 hitter. He's a 280 hitter. And Coombs like, yeah, he sure is. So what's going on with you in that regard?
As far as just offensive production in general?
Yeah. Can you even look at batting average when you're 257 at bats in and think about it? Or are we just in a tricky spot with the sample? What do you feel like is the reason that the numbers are down in that way?
I think just the quality of contact in general is down. For me, I think I've had a lot of balls that were either chopped on the ground or kind of flared in the air. And so, you know, even within, you can look at ground ball percentages or things like that, but even not all ground balls are created the same. Like there's different, big difference between a chopper and like, you know, a flush, like one hopper through the infield. Like those are not the same thing at all. And so I think for all of us it's true, but especially for me, I don't hit the ball as hard as some of the most powerful players. So the more that you can be on a line and controlling ball flights, it's the better chance you have. And, you know, there's always going to be variations on your luck with balls in play, but I think I'm at my best when I'm constantly putting balls in play that are well hit and on a line. And that sounds obvious, but that's your best chance for your misses to be productive too.
Listen, man, I know you're not an excuse guy, but how's the hand?
Oh, my hand feels good. Yeah, it's not impacting much. It hasn't been a factor.
You were hoping for it?
Not hoping, but I mean, no, of course not. I want him to be fine, of course. But I'd say,
yeah.
Explain.
No, I've been really happy with it. I was not sure, you know, in the couple days after and getting that result, like from the X-ray, MRI, all that stuff, that I wasn't sure how it would feel. You know, you just don't know until you do it. But my confidence has been really high physically in that area.
All right, yeah. It's a valid question, Speaks.
Yeah, I know.
Broke a bone in his hand and he's still playing professional baseball.
I know.
Like it might be a, it feels like it might be an issue.
Yeah, it doesn't take much for us to get into athletic awe in that regard. Hey, Nico, by the way, your line drive percentage is up. You were 19.1 last year. You're 19.8 this year. So no big difference for you. You know, in that regard. Hey,
I'm getting screwed. That's what I hear.
That's what it is. A lot of hang with ems. How good of a game is that for Dansby Swanson last night, by the way? Is that his best game of the year? But those defensive plays, huge extra base hit with men on as well.
Yeah. That felt like, at that point in the game, that ball that he smoked to left really felt like, kind of like the other day when he had the insurance run against the Giants too in the eighth, I think it was, with the bases loaded. But those are the kind of swings we haven't been getting, even with a lead, but to like then push it further and create an opportunity to break the game open. And I think it was 4-0 at that point, or right around there. And but the second play he made to his right was so impressive. I mean, just having played short, the hardest part of that play is, I don't think, is picking the ball up as much as just like transitioning to the throw and like. Is just agility and strength to get up from the ground and make an accurate throw, intentionally throwing a wand hopper and just like knowing the speed of the runner and all of that just happens so fast. And it ended up being somewhat routine, it seemed like, which was incredible.
We're talking to Nico Horner here, Parkinson Spiegel on The Score. Wanted to play something for you that Cliff Floyd said on the post-game show on Marquee that kind of made its way. Maybe, do you already know about what this is?
No. Okay. No, I talked to him the other day about hitting leadoff. I don't know, but that was it.
Okay, yeah, no, this is not that, but that's interesting, and we'll follow up there. But this is after the 5-2 loss on Sunday.
What's frustrating is as soon as the team gets down early and there's a couple runs scored against them, it feels like it's 10-0. It feels like the fight is gone. And when you think about the starting pitching, that's been – the all-star of the first half. They've been tremendous. So very frustrating to watch a team on a really special day come out a little flat.
Yeah.
As far as, with Sandberg, statue and all that, his day. So I don't know. It just seems like every time the team gets down, they sort of feel like they're out of the game as opposed to what we saw yesterday. Sure. That's the fight that I thought this team was about. And it's just not there consistently.
What's your reaction to that, Nico?
It depends on your perspective. I think that, it's easy to see the result end of it and equate it to like the emotional state of the team. Right. And we all feel results. It's real. And I don't think there's ever been an effort or spirit, issue with this group, but I do see from an outside perspective, you see low scoring games over and over and over, and you can be fed up with it. And, people from the outside have every right to say what they want about that. I think when it comes to like a fight perspective, I do think even games that we haven't came all the way back, just the, we have put a lot of runners on base and hit well against late end bullpen guys, which is usually the hardest time. So I don't think there's been an issue with fight or spirit, but, I feel that it was a day that felt like a special day with Sunday night baseball, with Sandberg, with, beautiful summer day at Wrigley. And it was a day we all wanted to capitalize on and make the most of. And, we happened to run into a pitcher that was throwing two different 98 mile an hour fastballs with good command and didn't produce at all. So that was the reality of it.
Yeah. It's interesting. We were talking about it before the break. I don't know that I've seen body language that translates to that. I look for that stuff. That stuff can matter, but I don't see a lack of communication or your head down. It's just wondering why the production hasn't been there when all those guys get on. Maybe it leaves people scrambling trying to figure out what's going on because it's so frustrating.
Yeah, and that's part of playing in a big market though. Like we all want to be in a place where we're held to a high standard and people are like, we're playing sports on TV and for entertainment. And like, we deserve to be criticized when things aren't going well. Like that's just what you sign up for. And I think we're lucky to be in a place where there is a high standard, right? Like it's the part of what makes the good things so good too. Right. So you can't like knock anyone that's holding you to a high standard or wanting more from the group, because that's what we want too.
How'd the conversation go about leadoff? I think that's kind of cool that different generations of ball players are still trading secrets.
Oh yeah, he had just asked me briefly. I don't know him very well personally, but just we had been talking briefly. Just he asked me just how I like leadoff in general, and you know if that impacted you know my approach at all, and just like my value there. And I think that was at a time when I wasn't hitting there as much, so he was just kind of asking about it. And yeah, I try not to change too much there, but it does feel like a fun responsibility where I can really impact the group.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, do you want to be the guy who takes a lot of pitches, or do you just want to be the guy who has really good, consistent at bats? I mean, that's more true to you. You like to swing the bat.
I do. But I think it's kind of like the runner in scoring position situation where I talked about, you know, you don't want to let the game context get you away from what you do best too much. But there are situations where, you know, I do feel some responsibility to get on base, and, you know, I have walked at a good rate this year, and you know, some of that has come from a passive place at times, but overall, I'm seeing the ball well and trust that's going to play out over time.
You got friends and family coming tonight?
Yeah. My mom will be here with family friends, and then nice mix of high school and college friends that have ended up in San Francisco. It's a special place here for me, and spent a lot of the last off season here, and we'll do that again. So always fun to be here.
That's awesome. And then same coffee spot tomorrow morning, or are you gonna change it up? You got options each morning.
So my go-to today, I don't know if you guys know Phil's Coffee, because they have them in Chicago, but Phil's was started in San Francisco, and they have a little coffee truck that's on the marina down by the water, and just a nice place to sit and hang out. So I went there with Julia, my girlfriend, this morning, and sat by the water, just took an Uber over to the ballpark, and I'm actually standing by Willie Mays Plaza right now. They got a beautiful statue of him here, which is covered in flowers and you know, nice notes and things like that. So pretty cool scene.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I've had Phil's ones in the West Loop. There's one in the West Loop.
Yeah, they got a couple spread out. Yep.
Very cool. This might be ridiculous. Do you still get nervous playing in front of your parents?
No. I've been pretty fortunate with my parents and their baseball relationship. My mom she wants me to be happy, and then my dad did absolutely everything you could ask for growing up, from ground balls to throwing BP to even catching bullpens well into high school for me. And, but never told me, you know, how to swing or that it was time to practice or do anything. So he was just pretty much there and available, which I think everything you could ask for. So I've been pretty lucky.
Oh, that's man, great. You are a source for like sports parenting advice, perhaps, because
how to be a healthy sports parent.
Yeah, because like my kid doesn't really want to hear anything from me about technique, whether I know it and learned it through osmosis or like talk to somebody or whatever. He doesn't want any of that from me.
Yeah, I think I was pretty lucky, and probably why I still actually like doing it. So, nice job, Dad.
But you don't actually hate baseball. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's a win.
All right, Nico. Thanks for the time, man. Enjoy being back home. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Later. Talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's Nico Horner from the Bay Area.
Actually likes doing it. You could be one of those kids whose dad drives you that hard, and then you get a chance to do it later in life, and you're like, wait a minute. F that guy.
I'm living his dream.
Wait, this was not my dream. That's my mistake.
But yeah, you know, the stereotype of like, oh man, my mom made it to the game, or my dad made it to the game. Uh-huh. And so you like press through. But in Nico's, it's like, sounds like they were at every game. And so it's not, you know, which is a huge luxury to be able to have parents who have the ability to do that sort of thing.
Not every player can hear the criticism of a local post game, of your own post game, and say, that's part of what we do in a big market, that we want that excitement. We want that focus. And with that comes the negatives. That's a pretty mature answer right there.
Very mature answer. It's funny, though. Cliff can make that specific criticism. I feel like we can ask questions about being lifeless, or are you guys having enough fun or whatever. But like, criticizing and questioning a team's heart or effort when there's not moments of like not respecting 90 or noticeably dogging it, then okay, fine, it's fair game. But like, when I heard that from Cliff Flitt, I was like, I'm personally more willing to say that they're bad than that they're not trying hard enough or not willing to fight and claw to come back. Because like, they came back in those White Sox games.
Yeah.
They had won 3 of 4 before that game Sunday against the Mets. Like, I don't see this as a lack of heart or care or effort. I'm much more likely to assign it to a lack of talent than I am a lack of care or effort. Me personally.
I understand. I feel like Cliff has much more of a freedom to say it
as a
player and seeing the body language. I continue to think it's a product of organizational approach and the team-wide hitting approach that, you know, what Cliff is referring to me is like, at bats where you're doing whatever you can do to possibly put the bat on the ball and put the ball in play with some decent contact and hope that you can get a hit. And maybe it has to be a single for a while, or maybe you'll get an error or whatever. But instead of trying to hit bombs, because then you look awful because you have that swing where you know it's not a bomb and then you're disappointed and it looks like, well, there it is. I couldn't do it. It's like, These guys, those at bats can look really frustrating, and the instant after the contact or lack of contact, they can just they can look down and lifeless and dead. And I think it's a product of an overall approach that has been a problem all season long.
It's so crazy, man. By the time this series is over, we will pass the halfway point of the season. Right, they're at 37-42, so 2 more games. And you're halfway through the year. So they will be under 500 at the midway point of this season. And will be 5.5 weeks or so from the trade deadline. And because of how baseball and the National League specifically this year are structured, they're right in it for the postseason. Though nothing about this team other than its starting pitching feels like a contender or a playoff team.
And nothing about that's all true. And nothing about the schedule upcoming gives you any confidence. This is the point of the schedule.
They just went through the weak part of the schedule. Yeah,
they're 9-13 in the 22 games against under 500 teams. They got 3 more. 9-13 so far with 3 more. And then after that, it's the Brewers and the Phillies, and there are road series at Baltimore and the Cardinals who've been hot and Kansas City in July. I mean, this is not... This is not a good stretch to be looking ahead to. That's why, Danny, I'm wearing a football shirt today.
Bears? You're feeling Bears.
Hey, man. When both teams lose, I don't reach for a baseball shirt. I can't do it
anymore.
Or
a collared shirt. You should have, when both teams lose, I throw baseball and professionalism out the window. And I just default to football.
Yeah, but
cretins.
If it happens again tonight, tank top tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
I'm not a punter, but I'm not afraid.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about. We weren't together when there was a big Chicago sports trade, and now the product of that trade is speaking and saying some interesting things, and people around the team are saying even more interesting things. We're going to translate some of this next. Score.
The punter in a tank top.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.